I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Raptors postgame show. We just watched game one, Raptors versus Philadelphia 76ers in Philadelphia. My name is Iman, and I'm joined by Asad. Asad, what is up?
Not much, really. Just more or less everything's down. That was a pretty brutal first game.
It was a pretty brutal first game right away with those two quick fouls on Fred VanVleet. Was that the quickest you've ever seen Fred VanVleet get two fouls?
It was interesting because it's like the first play of the game, Fred gets a touch foul guarding Maxey. That's like Maxey. Usually when refs, it's like if a player falls down or something, even if it's incidental contact, they're called a foul just because there's like significant advantage gained by the defense. But Maxey like recovered very quickly and they still called the foul. I'm like, well, this is going to be an interesting night if that's the whistle that's going to happen. And then we kind of only got that whistle one way. So it's a fun night for sure with the whistle at the minimum.
It certainly was. We had both Fred VanVleet and Chris Boucher fouling out of a game. I don't remember the last time. I don't think I've ever seen Fred VanVleet foul out a game, let alone have the Raptors have two guys fouling out. So it was very strange. I feel watching this game felt like watching another team. It didn't feel like the Raptors, everything that the Raptors excelled at, they didn't do. And some of the things that the Raptors have struggled at over the course of the season, they actually did fairly well. And I know that people may be a little doom and gloom after a loss, but I thought we would look at the good, the bad, and the ugly, because there was some good to take away from a game like this. So Asad, let me ask you, let's focus in on that first half. Maybe what were some good takeaways you had in that game?
Well, I think the only real good that you can take away is like it for the Raptors' main core guys. It didn't seem like offensively, I think they had it all night. Again, the offense wasn't really as much of a problem for the Raptors compared to what was thought to doesn't be for a game where you don't turn the other team over and you don't get any offensive rebounds. For the Raptors to show end up shooting like near 50% from the floor, 40% from three, like that's as good as an offensive night you're going to get. Like really offensively, I didn't think it was too much of a problem, but like that first, like that was probably the best that you could see from it. I think some of the issues ended up lining in. It's like, I know Nick Nurse said before the game, one of the things they were looking for was to limit Embiid's touches. Well, the Sixers did a great job of limiting Pascal's touches. Pascal, a lot of time ended up off ball. If he was getting on ball, it was late in the clock. It was tough. Like while he was efficient in all of his looks, it just wasn't getting as many looks. But I think really like in the first half, you're looking for anything. It was like, all right, well, offensively, when the Raptors actually set themselves, they were fine. Really, the entirety of the difficulties came on defense, where I think you can basically say the entire night just comes down to the Raptors defense never getting set. And we can talk about that more like if we'd like.
We'll get into the bad and the ugly. No, I definitely agree with you on the offensive end. You mentioned it near 50% from the floor, 40% from deep. One thing that I would mention just about the Pascal thing, because I thought you hit the nail on the head. They really did limit his touches. In that first half, Pascal had 5 field goal attempts. Preston Chua had 5 field goal attempts. That's what we were dealing with there, right? You never want Precious to have as many looks as Pascal, as many chances. And one of the things that I'll say about the offense there, because I did think that they played a fairly good offensive game, all things considered. They shot the ball well at the very least, which is something that the Raptors have struggled at doing. But where the Raptors struggled in their offense is they weren't getting looks in the way that they normally do. The Raptors are an elite transition offense. They weren't getting very many transition points. And we can get into why when we talk about some of the bad and the ugly there. But the second thing is those second chance opportunities. They just were not there for the Raptors. How do you think the Sixers, what do you think the Sixers really did to limit the Raptors from from grabbing those offensive boards that they get so regularly.
Well, listen, like we talk a lot about Glenn Rivers being not the best playoff coach, but the one thing Glenn is good at the minimum, he can get a good set plan. So he's good at coaching to a plan. They had a whole week, and clearly the Sixers came out a team that knew what their plan against the Raptors was going to be. They were gang rebounding every single miss, where if you look at the things, shot goes up, Joel Embiid is not over contesting. He's turning, sealing his man. And then there's three other Sixers jerseys in the paint ready to get a rebound. They weren't leaking out. Really, the only person who was in charge of leaking out was Tyrese Maxey. And that's fine if that happens. But again, the Raptors are getting kind of unlucky. They had a lot of long misses that were falling into Sixers' hands. They weren't really getting into good offensive rebounding position. I think also they were kind of built like when the offense worked, it worked well, but they had a lot of offensive possessions. Like they shot well when they got shots up, but the shots that they missed were coming in bad spots of the floor. So it was leading to break opportunities for the Sixers, or where the Raptors are out of position where somebody's driving and is out of the play and the Sixers are now going back 5-on-4. And that really opened up the Sixers transition game. And the Sixers were very good at making sure to attack early in the transition to get up the floor and get the Raptors a bit scrambled. I think one of the things that we noticed in this game that we haven't seen in the other matchups is this was the one game where the Raptors had both Fred and Gary Trent, and as good as defensively as they can be, and Gary Trent was not good defensively tonight, but even at their best, the one thing that does is just in terms of the Raptors' size, it makes the Raptors a smaller team. And in all the matchups that we've had with Philly before, the Raptors were playing with only one of them, so they were lining up four bigs. And I think that really helped the Raptors in terms of being able to be more switchable, be able to cut down transition a bit more, just because it gives you a little bit more margin of error because you have more size out there. And I think the Sixers took advantage of that. They were sealing Tobias down low on Fred, which also Fred two early fouls. Basically, that entire first half is, I think, the most passive I've seen Fred VanVleet play on defense, because he just could not do any of the stuff that he likes to do, which is digging in on the balls, making contests on people's hands to get those strips. And you could see that because the first play of the third quarter, he goes and he just strips the ball out of Tobias Harris's hands in the post, like violent strip. And that's where it's like, oh, well, he doesn't have foul trouble anymore. And I think that kind of really saddled Fred, where he's like, he stayed in foul trouble and kind of cut down his defensive abilities. But yeah, the Sixers did a really good job of making sure that they got on the defensive glass. The Raptors basically got no offensive rebounds the entire night. I think they had, what, three for the night or something like that. It was fairly ugly. And if the Raptors don't have that, they can't really press their advantage. The Sixers shot more shots today, and the Raptors aren't really going to win if the Sixers are going to shoot more shots. But even then, for the Raptors' offense to be as efficient as it was tonight, the fact that Philly was able to, like, I don't think this tonight is representative of what Philly's offense can do normally against this Raptors team when their defense is actually in play. I think in the half court, especially in the first half, in the first quarter, there was a lot of ball watching off ball. So a lot of shooters getting loose, one pass away, or just like quick 1-2 swing away. And that can't really happen. Like, you have to be a bit more locked in to start out the gate. And I think we saw the nerves hit, whether it was GTJ not really being there. Precious didn't have a very good first half at all, especially either defensively or offensively, but especially defensively, I think Precious was kind of all over the place. He's letting Joel get very deep position on him.
Yeah.
Another thing that hurts, Ken Burch, first play of the game on Joel Embiid, gets elbowed in the face and gets clocked out, basically taken out of the game, throws your entire rotation out, right? So now you got Fred VanVleet in foul trouble. You got Ken Burch out a minute into, like, 10 seconds into the play. And yeah, I was like, oh, your entire first half rotation is completely out of whack. So instead of bringing Boucher and Precious in together, like Nick Nurse likes to do to change the speed of the game, now you don't get to do that, right? So a little bit of bad luck there. But all in all, I think the Raptors just first half, they weren't defensively set. And then you saw that in the third quarter, first half of the third quarter, they really set themselves defensively when they had that unit. It was OG, Pascal, Precious, Fred, and Scotty.
Scotty, yeah.
And that was, again, you got four big dudes and one small, right? And suddenly the Raptors defense starts working a little bit better. And then you see OG gets subbed out. Gary Trent comes in. And then Tyrese Maxey absolutely lights the team on fire. We can talk about Gary Trent in the ugly section later. But yeah, that's kind of what the Sixers were able to do. They came in, they came in well prepared. And it'll be interesting to see how Nick adjusts from here on out. Again, with Doc Rivers, it's not about the game plan he sets. It's about the adjustments later in the series, if he's able to make them.
It is a long series. It's nice to know that you're starting the next one at 0-0 and not down, where it just felt like the Raptors just kept trying to kick and push and just could not do it. And credit to Tyrese Maxey, who just had a phenomenal third quarter there. And I think you hit on everything. Even with the good that the offense was, there still was some bad and some ugly in it. There was nothing that the Raptors did today that was completely good. And that's what happens when you lose by 20 points in game one of the playoffs. But I'm with you that that's probably where a lot of the bright spots are. The Raptors don't normally shoot this well. I mean, if I told you prior to us recording this or prior to the game happening that the Raptors would shoot near 50% from the floor, 40% from deep, you probably would walk away thinking that was a win. So let's get into the reasons why that wasn't. And that's the bad here, which was the defense. What were your thoughts on what you saw from the Raptors defensively tonight?
Well, in the first half, they just weren't locking down on defense at all. They weren't really making it hard for Joel Embiid. The doubles weren't really coming on time. And then I think the biggest problem for the Raptors were, like, they gave up – let me get this number correctly for you. Philadelphia had 10 offensive rebounds, which is, like, unacceptable, right? Philly's a very bad offensive rebounding team. And Philly attacked the glass, and the Raptors just let them. Like, you're boxing out Joel Embiid down low. I get it. Again, and these weren't – like, Joel Embiid – had 4 offensive rebounds, but 6 are coming from the other team. I don't know how many of those were in the first half, to be honest.
Right.
But again, it wasn't really Joel Embiid killing them on the glass as much.
It doesn't
as,
even
like,
have to be the first half. We're Tobias talking
Harris,
that up.
Tobias Harris is getting offensive rebounds. James Harden's getting offensive rebounds. Danny Green's getting offensive rebounds. Like, that's on your other guys to lock up. And like, the core of the Raptors defense is, all right, get the rebound and then push. Whoever gets it can push, right? So you saw, whether it's Pascal or Precious or whoever, locking up a B down low, and then the guards aren't coming down to rebound. And that's also, I'm going to look at Gary Trent Jr. Like, I understand that he's not a big rebounding guard, but you got to at least box out some of these guards that you're guarding, as once the shot goes up. Like, you can't be letting, like, these longer rebounds just, like, fall into people's laps.
And sometimes it wasn't even a longer rebound. There was one in the third quarter there where Harden just, like, missed a floater, I think it was. And absolutely no one boxed him out. He grabbed the board there and then kicked it out to Maxey, who was in the corner for 3. And there you go. Your defense is scrambling. Maxey's
and
hot.
On that
He's
play,
gonna hit that
and specifically
shot.
On that play, like, Harden gets the rebound. You have 2 down there. And then a third help defender comes down. It's like, well, guys, what are you doing? You have Harden trapped on the baseline. You don't need to bring any more help now. And that's where the help comes off the man in the corner. I don't know whether it was Chris Boucher or OG. I forget who was in that set, but it was Pascal, someone, and a third. And the man comes off the corner, and Tyrese Maxey has an open 3. He's been lights out all game. So what's kind of happening focus-wise, right?
And I'm with you on that entirely. And just to sort of accentuate your point here or add an emphasis to it, the Philadelphia 76ers are the worst offensive rebounding team. They have the lowest offensive rebounding rate in the entire league. The Raptors, meanwhile, have the second best, only behind Memphis. This is not a battle that you would expect the Raptors to lose. And quite frankly, the Sixers are a better offense than the Raptors. They have more offensive talent than the Raptors. So if you are losing a possession battle to a team that, for one, is going to live at the line way more than you do, they got, 10 more free throws than the Raptors this game, and that's not something that is unexpected. What's unexpected is the rebounding. And so that was really disheartening to see there. I'm completely with you on that. Now, it's time for the ugly. Can I start by saying these injuries? I was nervous coming into this game because everyone kept talking about the Raptors injury report being completely clear and clean and, like, how surprising and weird that was. And I was like, oh, this is giving me bad vibes. We're in for a drink. And then we, of course, get Embiid just smacking every single Raptor.
Which is ridiculous. Like, and Nick talked about this in his post-game presser, too. And I just wanted, like, here's the thing. Like, I know, like, when it comes to bigs, and this is whether it was Shaq, whether it was any other big, the one thing that as a big that you need to do is you have to be careful with your arms. Because in this league, always, if you hit somebody with your elbow in the face, because that's, like, if as a big man, it's very easy to hit somebody in the face with an elbow, you're going to get called an offensive foul, some sort of foul. That's the easiest way that bigs foul out usually, is by picking up those type of offensive fouls, which, regardless of intent, are a fouls. Like, you can't do that. You can't just hit somebody in the head, right? Regardless of whether you're bigger than them. Unfortunately, that's just how, like, that's the basic rules of the game. So Embiid got called for 1 headshot the entire game. And that was big. And I don't even, he wouldn't even really call for the headshot as much. It was just like Scotty had beaten him to the spot and was going through him. And he's like, face planting the guy and smacking him. He elbows Kem in the face. No call. Okay. He hits OG across.
And Kem, can I just say, Kem had to walk off the court. He came back, but he actually had to leave. And he was down for the entire possession when the Sixers went the other way in transition there. He was down for the entirety of that. And when the Raptors came back and scored on that possession, he was still kind of hobbled and just trying to find his groove. It was 4-on-5 the entire time and no call there. And then, of course, OG loses the contact.
And it's not even about complaining about the reffing. Like, okay, whatever. You even if Harden and Embiid get whatever free throws they get, whatever. Yes, they're doing a lot of flopping. There's a lot of semantics. Personally, I think if you're 7'2" and that big and that good at basketball, you shouldn't be doing all that. Like in the third quarter, there was literally a possession where Harden tried to like basically bait a jump shot foul on Achiuwa and missed a jumper that led to a Raptors transition. And it's like, what are you doing? You're the biggest guy on the court, right?
Because he got one in the first half doing the same thing.
But even all of that is fine, but you can't let a dude hit people in the face and not call anything. Because then it's just like, you can't even play the game at that point.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com. Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Point. So that was frustrating. And now to actually get to the injuries, like that Scotty injury is brutal. Like, I don't know how else to put it. Luckily, like the x-rays came back clean.
Yeah.
So you have that, but again, that's a really bad ankle sprain. And you know, we don't know what Scotty's history is with that ankle. Like, I don't know if Scotty's had ankle sprain on that ankle before, whether like how like sensitive his foot is, but the worst part about that injury is when you watch it. So usually when you sprain an ankle by yourself, right, where you just turn the ankle, like you're landing wrong, it's your own body weight. So when your body, like once the ankle turns and you feel the strain, your body automatically reacts. So it fires back, right? So usually it's like, oh, it just pulled way too far.
Right.
And now you're going back. In this case, it's an external force, right? It's literally Embiid stepping on it. So when you actually watch the replay, and I know it's going to be disgusting, so you can cut past this if you want, skip ahead in the video if you'd like.
But basically
you see it. The initial point where it turns, where Embiid's foot is like half on it, you see Scotty wince a little bit. He winces. And then when Embiid closes his entire step, you see Scotty let out a scream, because that's where it goes beyond the point where like his body stopped the first turn. And that's why, like, I don't want to jinx or anything. Hopefully he's back as soon as possible, but that does not look like an ankle sprain that is going to be a small amount of time. Hopefully he's like Giannis. Hopefully he's like a LeBron, where he just like magics himself back to the court. But
speaking of Giannis and LeBron and Scotty being just like them, because I don't want to hear any more about that injury. I'm sorry, we're skipping right by the ugly, because we know what was ugly. We saw it. And thankfully those x-rays came back negative for both him and for Thad Young as well. Scotty did not look scared at the moment. Scotty unfortunately left the game early, 2 assists shy of a triple-double in his playoff debut. That is amazing.
was awesome stuff. And you saw the, I think the thing, the real question with Scotty was like, and the questions really came, it was like Scotty, GTJ, Precious, even Chris Boucher to some extent, because he didn't have much playoff experience, it, like actually playing games. It was like, how are these guys going to look in their first like big playoff game where they're playing big minutes? And Scotty came out, and first possession, I was like, oh, he looks a little shaky. He gets Danny Green in the post and then completely blows a layup off the backboard. Then he comes out next time, just dunks it two hands. And I'm like, all right, he's ready to go. And Scotty looked amazing. He's throwing a no-look pass to the baseline to the cutter for an easy dunk. He's getting guys on his back and like not scared of the extra ball pressure on him, keeping his dribble alive. He just looked good all around. He's shooting a jumper in Joel Embiid's face. Like, it was, I think,
through contact.
Everything, it was everything you could ask for from a debut for Scotty Barnes. And it is an absolute shame that it ended the way that it did, because that looked like it was going to be a 20-point triple-double easily for the night. And you really hope that the kid comes back from it and he's back for the season. I'd like to see him play again in the playoffs, because, man, did he look special. And it would be a shame for him to miss out on a playoff run.
So I know that we were focusing on the good, the bad, and the ugly in the first half, but to me, the second half was just a continuation of what we saw. There were some good moments with the Raptors kind of fighting back, but nothing that they did in the second half really changed entirely from the bad that they were giving us in the first. I mean, they kind of got closer to tying up the possession battle with the Sixers, but it still just wasn't good enough. And really, that third quarter was entirely the Maxey show. And the fourth quarter, the game was out of reach. Like, am I wrong in just sort of saying that is the recap that we have of that game? So I want to ask you, because I know that there are some Raptor fans that are thinking, hey, it's just game one. It's a curse. We've been there. We've done that. Let's look forward to game two. But then there are some other Raptor fans that are really worried with what they've seen today. Is there a camp that you fall into, and can you give anybody therapy if they're in group two?
In terms of the actual basketball that was played, like, the Raptors are never going to play defense that poorly again in this series. Like, that was just like the Sixers had a game plan. They countered a lot of the Raptors' offenses, and the Raptors basically went out there to try and play their own game. And they didn't have the, like, whether it's experience or whatnot, they didn't have the live counters defensively to kind of deal with that. And, you know, they'll look at tape, and I'm sure they'll adjust, and they'll be more focused for game two. Like, they were just, like, defensively, there's no way that the Raptors are going to give up 70 points a half.
No,
like, for the rest of the series. That's not what this team is. It's not what this team has shown. And it just played up as in talent. Like, a lot of the times the Raptors defense was failing them in transition, which is something that they've been very good at, especially in the second half of the season, is shutting down transition with all their size, right? So I'm not terribly worried about that. I'd look good. Like, OG and Pascal did not have issues scoring the basketball.
Yeah.
And OG did look very good, especially in that fourth quarter. He got loose for a little bit. I don't know what happened there in the third quarter with the rotations, where OG basically sat for the entire back half of the third. I think the plan for Nick was, you know, try to buy OG some minutes because he's still coming back. The Raptors looked like they were hot. Fred was hot. And they had it down to like 12 at one point with like a minute or two left.
Close.
And it was like, if you could have it within 12 going into the fourth quarter, then you play OG and Pascal for the stretch run. You try to make a comeback, right? And that math didn't end up working out for him just because of how horrible Gary Trent Jr. was.
They had it down to 12 for a minute.
But yeah, so I think looking forward, there's no way the Raptors played defense that poorly. Mm-hmm. Again, Tobias Harris and Tyrese Maxey getting loose like that. Tyrese Maxey is going to be a problem, but I think the Raptors have enough to at least make him not have a 40-point night on them. And I think the defense on James Harden was fine. James Harden hit a couple step-back threes, but let's be honest, like, outside of him taking advantage of the Raptors' poor defense, like just helping off their shooters, James Harden wasn't really doing much downhill. Like,
yeah,
he got the free throw line a bit. He got cheeky with a couple fouls. The Raptors are going to clean that up most likely. There's a couple lazy reach-ins. Mm-hmm. But you clean that up. I don't think James Harden either proved or disproved his ability to be able to kind of take over the game tonight.
Okay.
If that step back three is hitting for a couple more games, all right, maybe we'll see. But I think there's a lot of hope for the Raptors in that sense. The part where it kind of kills the Raptors, and this is the thing, is these injuries. Because realistically, the Raptors are going to need one of Scotty or Thad available just to have enough bodies
to
pull off. I don't even think they need both. Like, realistically, they do need both. Like, ideally, you want both. But for the team that they have, because they have OG back now, right? So OG is a very capable and very high minute guy. If you have Fred, you have OG, you have Pascal, you have Precious, That's four guys who you can run your defense with, right?
Mm-hmm.
You need to add that fifth, and that fifth is usually going to be Scotty. If not Scotty, then it's going to be Thad. And then you're hoping that Gary Trent Jr. never has that bad of a game ever again. Because, like, regardless of his offense, which was truly horrendous, that was probably the worst defensive game Gary Trent Jr. has put out the entire season, where he was legitimately a pylon. Like, the Raptors don't really have the personnel for Tyrese Maxey, but Gary Trent Jr. was, like, literally unable to do anything against him.
Yeah.
Where it wasn't even, like, it wasn't even, like, even a little bit of resistance at the point of attack. Where it's, like, you have to be way better than that if you're Gary Trent Jr. in this series to, like, be out there on the floor. So, realistically, if those become your six or seven guys you can count on, and then, you know, you're hoping for Chris Boucher not to play as poorly as he did tonight. Chris Boucher, again, some very questionable decisions. He also got screwed with some really bad foul calls, but he did make some very questionable decisions, doubling super late, just making bad decisions on the back
end. I feel like the entire team was very jittery on the defensive end. I think there are certainly people that you can point to, and we talk about it, defense is played on a string. You got a couple of guys that are kind of scrapping the bed a little bit on the defensive end. It's just going to ruin it for everybody else. Like, that's just kind of how defense is played. The Raptors, I just, like, the ability to force turnovers and get out and run in transition is just what this team thrives off. That's what you're going to need. If the Raptors are going to win any of these games, it's going to be by getting stops. 29 assists to three turnovers is what is the number that's going to stick out in my head after this game.
Well, that was the lowest turnover game in, like, playoff history. Even if you want to, like, sure, there were some Philly shenanigans by their scorekeeper.
There were certainly some Philly shenanigans in there, because I was literally composing a tweet being like, can't believe the Raptors only forced one turnover. And as I was doing that, I saw them force another turnover on Harden right underneath the basket. Jack called it a turnover on the broadcast too. And then I go look at the box score and it says zero turnovers. And I'm like, there should be at least two. What is happening? But still, regardless of, you know, whether they're not counting some turnovers or crediting them as blocks or whatever else, still, the Raptors did not get out and run in transition enough. They did not get stops enough. And if you're not doing that, I just worry about what this team looks like. And that's why I think they need both Scotty and I think they need Dan there as well. Just as many bodies as possible, because it may be a short series as opposed to a long one.
It's going to be interesting. Again, my whole outlook for this whole series, and this is where, like, we'll get to hope. Again, the Raptors are a road team. So realistically, you just got to win one. First two games of the series, Sixers are supposed to win those games, right? You just got to win one of them. They had a hot shooting night tonight. They were great tonight. Let's see them do it again, right? It's a long series. If people remember even that seven-game series in 2019, of course, a lot of talent, more talent on both teams that year. But there were, like, three games that were blowouts. Like, Philly blew out the Raptors a couple times. Raptors blew out the Sixers a couple of times. So in a seven-game series, it matters more on the cumulative of the games rather than just, like, an individual game. And
that's very again, true.
I trust the Raptors players not to care. Like, they've had bad games this season where they've looked horrendous, especially after breaks. Their defense definitely resembled their post All-Star game, All-Star break defense, where they gave up basically 130 a night to some questionable teams. So I do think they'll kind of snap back into it. Again, I think
my only worry is that took them, what, four games to snap back? Yeah. It took them facing a depleted Nets team to snap back.
Yeah. The hope is, and again, like, today was a little weird because you couldn't really tell whether Fred was actually labored by his knee or not. I think he definitely doesn't look perfect.
I don't think he looks right.
Yeah. But he hit a lot of shots. He hit a lot of tough shots, a couple fading shots. So that's good for him. He was able to get in and into the lane. He had a nice left-handed finish through traffic with Embiid on his back. And it's tough to tell because, again, he was very passive in the first half after drawing those two fouls. But if Fred VanVleet is able to play at 80%, I think the Raptors still have a good shot at the series. Again, Pascal and OG are now going to be higher usage with Scotty out. If we're just going to predict that Scotty's probably going to miss game two.
Let's do this. Instead of looking out into the series at large and instead of focusing at a potential seven games, let's look at game two. What are you expecting to see from game two? Let's put, you know, you may get one of Thad or Scotty, but probably not having them both ready for game two.
I'm going to take a guess. I'm going to say that's probably going to be available. Like, a sprained thumb kind of sucks. You can't grip the ball, especially because it's on a shooting hand. But I'm sure he's going to ice the crap out of it. They'll probably put some needles in it. do some acupuncture, wrap it up with some shoestring. He'll be good to go. He only needs to give him like 10 to 15 minutes. I think what you see is you probably see Precious start. One of Precious or Kem, really depends on which one. If I think Nick might go with Kem starting just so he can bring Precious and Boucher off the bench together. And that'll kind of give you a more normal Raptor starting lineup. I don't know if they'll be able to press the same advantages, but you should be seeing more Pascal, more OG kind of operating in the middle of the floor, hopefully. And hey, OG with more usage tonight, he looked pretty good. He had some great plays. He was toasting. He got James Harden on those switches, and he was destroying James Harden off dribble.
And I'm not mad at the idea of a more traditional Raptor starting five. We've seen it in the regular season. They started the two bigs versus the Sixers, and that did not work well to start off. And then we saw a smaller starting lineup, the one that the Raptors normally throw out there against the Sixers today, and that did not start off really well. So I kind of like the idea of moving to a more traditional starting five with a big out there so the Raptors don't just look so small.
And again, it's going to come down to, can the Raptors by the end of the second quarter be kind of caught up in the game? Because we know
they lost their Embiid minutes today, which is
that's unbelievable, right? And that's where like your rotations are messed up, sure, but that's very directly on some of your bench guys, like your bench contributors that are coming in. When Embiid's out, that is the entire time for Precious, Boucher, Gary Trent Jr. to kind of go off, right? Because the rim opens up, the offensive rebounding chances open up, and that just never happened. Both times, and they let Tyrese Maxey get loose on the other end. So to lose the Embiid minutes both times tonight, that's unacceptable. And I don't think you should, like, if that's going to happen, the series is going to be pretty quick, but I don't see that happening again. So game two, I think the Raptors put out a much better performance. I think it's going to be a close game. I don't know if the Raptors end up winning it, but it's going to be definitely a closer game going down to the fourth, and then it just comes down to what the execution looks like down the stretch. And I'll be honest, as good as Philly is when they're front running and they're ahead, I have major questions about them when it's a close game and they need to execute down low. Because again, Joel Embiid, even tonight, second half of that game, started looking pretty sluggish. Presses were blowing by him, getting attempts at dunks, and he started looking sluggish. So let's see how much, because how many minutes did they play again tonight? Like, Doc basically played Embiid and Harden as much as he could tonight. Harden played 40 minutes and Embiid played 37, right? So, and that's, you're in a blowout. So, we're talking about game two, game three, game four. Again, the Raptors' big benefit here is that Harden and Embiid are not known for their longevity playing big minutes. So the heavier those minutes get, the heavier those legs get, that's where the Raptors have their chance to really steal a game.
I'm completely with you on that. I think Sixers are one of the better teams when they're out in front. They like to celebrate. We'll get the airplane arms from Embiid. They're a great front running team, but when they get punched in the mouth, I think is everyone sort of pointed out, that's when the wheels fall off very quickly for a team like this. And so we just have to wait for the Raptors to make their first punch. And I'm hoping that we see that in game two. Thank you, Asad, for joining me. And thank you everyone for listening to the Raptors playoff post-game show brought to you by Yahoo Sports Canada. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell your friends all about it.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
A little something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.